9 o'clock. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jim Davis, along with the Buckeye Boy, the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network, 101.1 FM, 1340 AM in the Valley, from Palisade to Fruita and all points between, 102.1 for the North Fork Valley and Highway 50, and online. Get our mobile app for Android or iPhone at theteam1340.com. Got a smart speaker. Ask it to play 1340 The Team.
Demand it play The Team. See how that works. As the Android rises up and takes over your life. We have a winner for the number game.
Okay. Let me do this. Let me take care of that. Move this here. Do this thing. And there we go.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the winner of the contest.
It's another winner on the Team Sports Network.
All right. So we are wondering, since Peyton Manning was drafted in the 24 Super Bowl since, how many of those have not had either a Manning, Brady, Rodgers, or Roethlisberger started quarterback? Kyle answered correctly, the number 7. And 4 of those 7 were the first 4, 98, 99, 2000, 2001. And then out of the next 20 Super Bowls, 17 have had either Peyton or Eli, TB12, Rodgers, or Roethlisberger as a starting quarterback. That's ridiculous. And I think of the 20, so 40 starting quarterbacks, I think 31 of them are between those 5 guys. It feels right. Maybe it's wrong, but, you know, between like 20 and 30. It's ridiculous.
It is. It shows, number one, whether you love or hate Brady, how good Tom Brady's been.
Yeah.
And how good he still is. And there was a lot of talk at the at the end of the game yesterday. There were some reports, allegedly, that
he was real hot about that, like 2 hours before kickoff.
Yeah, that he was going to call it quits. We still have not heard Tom Brady make any mention of retiring, like some were saying that he was contemplating doing if they lost that game yesterday, or whatever the outcome would have been if they had won and gone to the NFC Championship game and maybe another Super Bowl. Some more news about the Broncos coaching search. That, according to Mike Kliss, that Dan Quinn's going to get a second interview. Also, Nathaniel Hackett will get a second interview as well. And that if Dan Quinn ends up being the guy in Denver, there's a couple guys that could be coming with him. One of them is Cowboys secondary coach Al Harris. The other would be Jacksonville Jaguars interim coach Daryl Bevel, who they were together in Seattle when Quinn orchestrated the defense there for Pete Carroll. Bevel was the OC. And that Daryl Bevel could end up coming to Denver to be the offensive coordinator. So looks like that Quinn and Hackett are both going to get another interview for the Broncos, according to Mike Kliss. As it sounds like Denver's kind of narrowed it down to Dan Quinn, Nathaniel Hackett, and also, gosh, who was the other name that they had?
Gannon, right?
Yeah, I mean, sorry, yeah, Jonathan Gannon. Who's the other guy? Jonathan Gannon, Philadelphia Eagles defensive coordinator. Those three guys right now have emerged, according to multiple sources, have emerged as the three finalists that the Broncos have kind of honed in on. So we'll see. We could be getting an answer on this maybe by the end of the week. Maybe by Wednesday, possibly, the Broncos will announce who their next head coach is going to be. All right, so text or call us, 970-242-1340. What's your thoughts on, was this the best weekend of NFL playoff history or NFL playoff football you've seen in your football history of watching NFL playoff action? Hard to argue, right?
Yeah, considering if I feel like it is for me, yeah.
Every game and what, you know, how it came down to field goal and regulation, or in the case of the Kansas City game, went to overtime. So we've got some thoughts on that today. Text or call us, 970-242-1340. Hey. Your reaction to the final four, Jonathan Gannon, Dan Quinn, Nathaniel Hackett, if that is indeed truly the three finalists, who do you like of that group? Dan Quinn's the safe bet. Hackett would be intriguing. considering
he's got time on his hands.
He's got this, he's got time on his hands. And I don't know, how much do you, the Packers' inability offensively to beat the Niners, do you go, oh, that's Hackett's now damaged goods?
Doesn't help.
Yeah, it doesn't. But does it totally take him out of the conversation? No, it shouldn't.
It shouldn't.
Because how much of that is Aaron Rodgers not playing well in that game down the stretch?
But there's a little bit of, I mean, we talk about chicken and egg, right, with some of these OCs. This game in particular is kind of that chicken and egg. If Aaron Rodgers is going to get the blame for whatever, and Matt LaFleur is going to get the blame, and Nathaniel Hackett is held blameless, that doesn't sound like he has a lot to do with it, right? Both good and bad.
He does have something to do with it, but is it enough for...
But you know what I mean?
Yeah, for him to also, oh, sorry, you're not in consideration anymore.
It was all Aaron Rodgers. It wasn't Nathaniel Hackett. Well, so how much are you actually having to do? You know, it's like, I called the plays just fine. Aaron Rodgers couldn't make the play. I
mean, yeah.
Guy's going to Canton. He's got a Super Bowl ring. He's going to be the MVP, maybe.
How much do you, the next interview with Hackett, how much does that come up in conversation? Hey, what happened to you guys the other night? What went on there?
If you're doing due diligence, it's probably one of the first things.
Yeah, you got to talk about that. So, yeah, I think you can't immediately say, oh, I'm sorry, we're just not interested now. But it has to be, I think, part of the conversation.
Absolutely.
That it does. But you look at, you know, when you sit down and talk with him again about what went wrong mm-hmm. in that game against the Niners. As far as ownership, I read a couple of different reports this weekend. One of them from a website called Front Office Sports, that there's now kind of a leader at the moment in terms of Broncos potential ownership. Keep in mind, it's going to be a bid. And apparently Brittany Bolin's put together a group where she's going to bid on the Broncos. Her daddy's team. Which, if all the Bolin kids could have got on the same page, this would... Look, if Pat would have done a better job, God rest his soul, if Pat would have done a better job initially, it wouldn't have come to this. If he would have laid out a plan that was a better succession plan, mm-hmm. how this is going to play out and how it's going to appease all of his kids, then we wouldn't be here. But he didn't do that. And then the next best thing would have been all the Bolin kids agree on somebody to run this football team. And they all find a way of getting some kind of compensation away. We're okay, Brittany's the one that's going to be leading the team going forward. She'll be the face of the Bolin family as ownership. And we're all in agreement that we want to keep the team in the family. Well, they could not do that. And so now we're into this bidding process where we've talked about the Mannings, Peyton and his mm-hmm. family being part of an ownership group, John Elway being part of a potential ownership group, Brittany Bolin apparently has some kind of ownership group situation coming together. But a name that was mentioned a lot this weekend is kind of your early leader, because he's got the money to do it,
mm-hmm.
and that's billionaire Robert Smith. Ties to the Denver area, that Front Office Sports said that Smith has emerged as a possible bidder, and he could become the first black owner of an NFL franchise. 59 years old, the richest black person in the United States, with an estimated worth of $6.7 billion. Keep in mind, whoever the principal owner is has to put up 30% of
from the jump
what that bid price is going to be.
So you're looking at over a billion and a quarter, maybe, for the Broncos, because it was between 3.5 and 4
is what they were valued. 3.75 billion right now. It's expected to be at least $4 billion.
Mm-hmm. So he's going to have to put up, $1.25 billion? Like it's, actual dollars and cents. I'm talking, it's just monopoly money at that point.
He founded Vista Equity Partners in 2000. He's still the chairman and CEO. They have $86 billion in assets under wealth management. He also had a few situations with some offshore accounts, some issues that were of a legal nature that apparently have now been cleared up. But you're looking for something about him that potential red flag for fellow owners.
Taxes, right?
Yes, it was a tax situation, yes, with some offshore accounts and things like that. And so, but that has now been
resolved.
And so, I mean, he had the 2019 commencement speech at Morehouse College, where he pledged to pay off the student loans of the entire graduating class. Ended up costing him $34 million. It was kind of a cool thing that Robert Smith did.
Yeah.
You need 24 of 32 owners.
Like $11.
Yeah, for him. Me. Yeah. 24 of 32 owners have to approve of him. Number one, he has to win the bid.
Right.
And then they have to approve his ownership.
And if it doesn't go well, he can just fade into the phone book, right? Robert Smith. You're not going to be able to pick that guy up.
Exactly. So that's a guy you probably want to keep a close eye on as possibly being the Broncos' next owner.
Denver guy, right?
Denver guy. He grew up in Denver. That being the first black NFL owner would certainly carry some weight mm-hmm. with other NFL ownership in terms of trying to enhance diversity within the National Football League.
Yeah.
And of the guys right now that we are fairly certain are going to probably bid on it, because the Jeff Bezos, there's talk that he is, but nothing has been really confirmed, very solidified that he is going to make a run at buying the Broncos. He could very well jump in and get involved in this. But Smith makes a lot of sense in terms of an owner based in Denver. Not that that's a prerequisite. But for ownership, as far as other owners approving him, certainly helps. And him being the first black owner would certainly be a couple of things. And he's, right now, the people that we're talking about, he's the one that's got the money to pull this off. That we know. We don't know who is in the Manning group or the Elway group or the Brittany right. Bowling group. We just know they are. And none of those people have enough money of their own, like Robert Smith does, to make this happen.
Full disclosure, I'm just straight up stealing this from Vic Lombardi, our buddy over with Altitude. It's a question he put out on Twitter this morning. Because, the ownership situation is in the news, and it is a talking point about the team. But his question is, do you care more about the identity of the next owner or the next quarterback? Which do you care more about?
I'm going to say most people are probably going to say quarterback.
And I think you should. The owner doesn't. I mean, at the NFL level, if the owner is meddling, that's usually not good. But if he puts football people in place, which George Payton is in place, it seems like that new ownership group may keep him because he's done well so far in his first, 11, 12 months, for the most part. I think that maybe they'll just kind of let him go. They keep John Elway as president or whatever his role is right now. I think you should be worried more about the quarterback than the owner, because the owner is stuff that has very little to do, unless it brings bad publicity to the team and the fan base, has very little to do with anything. You know what I mean? It's like most owners of NFL teams, you can't pick out who they are or what's going on just off of name basis. I mean, the fans of the team might be able to. Like, I know the Haslam owns the Browns, but do football fans at large know who they are? And they had their whole Flying J insider thing where a couple of guys went to prison for that.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it's important. It does matter. But right now, I think if you're just the average fan, mm-hmm. you're more worried about who the next coach is going to be and who the next quarterback is going to be, and not in that order necessarily. Right. But right now, you're going to get an answer about head coach way before you are about
either of them.
Rodgers or ownership or anything like that.
You're going to get coach and quarterback way before you get ownership. And I just don't know how. I wonder what the level of care just by the general fan is about the ownership situation. We care about it because, it's one, the Bolin children slap fight is always interesting.
Right.
And can fill a good segment or two, So, and we care about it just because it's news and it's, something that does have a tangible effect on the team. But I wonder just generally, do the Broncos fans really care that much who owns the team next? As long as it stays in Denver and they do everything they can to compete, I don't think it
matters.
Then I
don't think they give a rip. If it's the Mannings group or Elway's group, fine. Okay, great. But it's about what happens moving forward for this team to getting back to being a contender in the AFC. By the way, with Smith, that he engaged, and this is from the New York Times, in a 15-year scheme to hide $200 million in income and evade millions in taxes through a network of offshore trusts and bank accounts.
I mean, who hasn't?
Me. You.
I barely have enough to put money in my onshore bank account.
No kidding. And so Smith, Vista's chairman and chief executive, learned in the summer of 2016 he was subject of a criminal tax investigation involving also Robert T. Brockman, not to be confused with Brockmeyer, a billionaire Texas businessman who helped create Vista, which...
I believe his Smith, brother's Kent Brockman of The Simpsons.
I cannot believe what my brother did.
Now, at the risk of being unpopular, this reporter places the blame for all of this squarely on you.
On you, Robert T. Brockman. That because of their relationship, that's how the Fed started looking into this. And that fall, Vista began providing investors with periodic, if minimal, updates on the federal inquiry. Eventually, it got resolved. Smith's non-prosecution agreement provided far more details and indicated that Mr. Smith knew he had violated the law. He agreed to pay $139 million in fines and penalties and forego claims he made on his tax returns for $182 million in charitable deductions in 2018 and 2019. So that's how they resolved it. And for those of you like, oh, there's something going on here. Is Robert Smith the right guy?
What's the likelihood we get just a fine and a slap on the wrist if we don't pay our taxes?
We get sent to the pokey. We get thrown in jail is what happened to us. All right. So 9-17, Jim along with the Buckeye boy.
Nice problem to have.
Yeah. No kidding.
Can you cut me a check for $179 million? Yeah, I can do that.
I can do that. Sure. All right. I want to quickly recap the high school sports weekend because we had a busy weekend of basketball and wrestling going on. Start out with girls basketball, Fruital Monument and Central. They continue their winning streaks after Southwestern League play this past weekend. Wildcats, they were winners over Durango 49-33 on Saturday to move their winning streak to 7 straight. Fruita freshman Olivia Campbell, she has been an outstanding addition to the Wildcats lineup. She scored a season-high 21 points to push the Wildcats now 13-2. They're 2-0 in the SWL. They're on a collision course with Central. Central's on a 9-game winning streak after beating Durango 43-40 in overtime. Bryn Wagner led the Warriors with 13 points. She also hit a couple of big free throws in overtime with just seconds left to nail down that victory for Mary Doan's team. Central's now 12-1, 2-0 in the SWL. The Montrose girls, they defeated Grand Junction 37-10 with the Indians' Taylor Yanowski and Tegan Rocco, each scoring 8 points apiece. Central or Montrose is now 9-6. They're 1-1 in the SWL. The Tigers, Seda Bond, scored 7 points. Grand Junction's now 1-15. They are 0-3 in the SWL. Palisade girls, they're off to an 0-4 start in the 4A Western Slope League. They lost to Battle Mountain 32-29, and 3A Delta's 2-0 in the Western Slope League after blasting Roaring Fork 75-19. Eric Akuda hit for 21 points. The Panthers are now 8-2. The Montrose boys basketball team, we didn't get a chance to mention them at the end of last hour. We should, because they have won 15 straight, and they beat Grand Junction 65-42. The Indians' Luke Hutto scored 22 points, with Reese Skinner scoring 11 for the 11-6 Tigers. Palisade boys, after that 1-4 start, they won their fourth straight league game with a 61-41 win over Battle Mountain. Paul Steinke scored 21. Donovan Mestis, as you mentioned when you were talking about Prep Stars of the weekend, Buckeye, Mestis had 17 for the Bulldogs. As I mentioned, they're 4-0 in the Western Slope League. Central boys, they fell to Durango 49-31. They're now 4-9. Fruital Monument edged Durango 46-44. They're 6-9 overall. The Wildcats' Carson Hollingshead led the way with 15 points. Delta boys won their first Western Slope League game with a 58-48 victory over Roaring Fork. Area wrestlers competed all across the state this past weekend. Palisade Bulldogs took 7th at the Fight at the Fork tournament. Bulldogs 195-pounder UCL Romero won the title after beating Hayden's Israel Santos 3-1 in sudden death. Cedar Edge won the tournament. They had three champions in Landon Martin, Ethan Toothaker, and Ty Walsick. Two Grand Junction wrestlers placed at the Top of the Rockies tournament at Centaurus. The Tigers' Micah McKinney took 3rd at 160, with Cale Moore losing in the 152-pound match. All right, quick recap of the prep weekend. Something you want to add before we take a break?
So Montrose boys basketball hasn't lost a regular season home game in almost 2 years. Or a regular season game, sorry. Regular season game in almost 2 years. It was February the 4th of 2020, the last time they lost a regular season game.
They went 18-1 last year, by the way.
It was February 15th of 2019 since the last time they've lost at home, period.
Ryan Vohringer has them playing sensational basketball
again.
That would
be, I believe, Lou Cotto's freshman year.
It's incredible.
He's the senior.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. 9:20, Jim along with the Buckeye Boy. Glad to have you along today. And the good, the bad, the ugly. We'll also have this day in sports history, but we didn't get a chance to do good call, bad call. Because we've got some for that. We'll have that coming up a little bit. But next, the Fruita Monument Hall of Fame. They'll induct six members coming up on February 4th during halftime of the Fruita Monument boys basketball game with Central. One of those folks going in, former state wrestling champion Lanny Paulson. We'll talk with him next on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network.
Who do I listen to?
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader.
Whoever suggested that has got to be smoking crack and plenty of it.
Whoa.
The Team.
Welcome back, Jim, along with the Buckeye Boy. We'll have this day in sports history, also good call, bad call, coming up in a little bit. But coming up on February 4th, the latest class, the 2022 class of the Fruita Monument Hall of Fame, will be inducted. And in that group of six individuals will go in, Lanny Paulson, state champion back in 1979, 155-pound 3A state champion on the mats, will be one of that prestigious group that will go in on February 4th. He joins us right now. Lanny, I appreciate the time. How are you doing?
Great, Jim. Thank you.
Well, first off, congratulations on going into the Fruita Monument Hall of Fame. As I mentioned, you won the 1979 155-pound state title for the 3A classification. You were the Southwestern League most valuable wrestler that year. You also, the year before, fourth place finish at state. You're a two-time league champion as well. You only lost eight matches your entire career. You went 76-8 before you went on to wrestle collegiately. But congratulations on being voted in. And what was that moment like for you when you found out that you're going into the Wildcat Hall of Fame?
Well, I was very humbled and honored. I mean, there's a lot of great history at Fruita Monument, especially you know, when it comes to the tradition for wrestling. So, you know, I was just honored to be included with the group in 2022 and all those that have preceded me.
Lanny Paulson, former Fruita Monument state wrestling champion, joining us today. Mentioned you won it at 155 back in 1979. Kind of take us through that state tournament that year, Lanny, in regard to winning a state title and some of the challenges that maybe you faced that year.
Well, you know, it's always a challenge when you step out on the mat. Yeah, had a great senior year. You know, went undefeated through the year. Actually, only ended up giving up 5 points that were scored against me all year. One of those was in the finals. I knew I had a really tough finals match coming up with Leister Bowling out of Boulder. It was a tough match. Ended up winning in overtime. So it was just kind of the highlight of my high school career for sure.
Lanny Paulson joining us today on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network. Who do you give a lot of credit for, Lanny, in regarding to shaping you as a wrestler back then?
Oh man, there's a long list of those people that, like I said, Fruita had a strong tradition in wrestling. That was originally built by Jack Pollock. He retired before I got into high school, and so my high school coach was Gene Williams, and he was a great coach also. But kind of the cool thing about growing up in Fruita is you learn so much from all the wrestlers that came before you, whether it was Joe Silva, the Hoisingtons, the Reeds. Everybody was always welcome in the room, and you just picked up different things from different people. if I had to narrow it down to one, you know, it probably, for me, it probably has to be Bill Trump. He was one of my junior high school teachers, but and coaches, but he basically ran, I guess, what you'd consider a summer program for us then. He hauled us all around the state during the summer doing, you know, the freestyle tournaments. He had a wrestling room at his house where we were always welcome to go out there and work out whenever we wanted to. And so he just provided us with a lot of mat time and a lot of experience.
And you're right about the tradition at Fruita, where you'd be out competing. And like I said, a Joe Silva, you know, multi-time state champion, who's also in the Fruita Monument Hall of Fame, or in his case, the Fruita Hall of Fame, going back to the school before it became Fruita Monument. You know, the Dirk Hoisingtons, you know, Larry Reed, guys like that. I mean, that's what an incredible amount of talent and knowledge that, you know, those guys were always around the program, and you could always tap into that. Also, living out in Fruita, you'd see those guys and a chance to pick their brains a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was critical for me personally and for everyone. Like I said, it's everyone kind of has their own style of wrestling and different things that work for them. And, you know, you might pick one thing up from this guy and something from somebody else. You know, I learned to ride from Dick Hoisington. I mean, he taught me how to ride, how to use arm bars. You know, picked up some things from Larry Reed that were a little bit more unconventional, I guess you'd say, but there were certainly situations where those moves that he taught came in handy. So yeah, I mean, that's just learned a lot from a lot of different people.
He's going into the 2022 Fruita Monument Hall of Fame, Lanny Paulson, former state champion back in 1979, joining us on the program today. Who was the guy, though, that you had to wrestle against at practice, Lanny, that maybe tested you and helped you have that kind of undefeated season that you had as a senior? Who's a guy you give credit for just after physically pushing you on the mats?
Well, there was, you know, we had a good class in 1979, so there was a lot of talent in the room. You know, everyone from Ronnie Howler to Sid Veal and Terry Forney, there's just a lot of people around my weight class that, you know, you had to bring it in practice or, you know, you're going to get your butt kicked. So that, you know, all those guys help push.
And then you went on to wrestle collegiately. You were at the University of Utah, where you're NCAA Division I freshman All-American. And you were a three-time before you, of course, you were at Utah. Then you moved on to Northern Colorado to wrestle for the Bears. You were a three-time NCAA Division II All-American, UNC's most valuable wrestler on two different occasions, all-conference academic team three times. So the collegiate part of you went from Utah to Northern Colorado. Kind of take us through that period of time as a collegiate wrestler for Lanny Paulson.
Yeah, you know, I got recruited to go wrestle at the University of Utah, and that was, and you talk about, we had a stellar team that year. I think we'd won the WAC for the first time in like 10 years, and eight of the 10 starters that year were freshmen or sophomores. So a really talented group in the room. I really learned a lot that first year and got a lot better. Unfortunately, because of Title IX, they ended up dropping the wrestling program after my freshman year. So that's why I transferred to UNC. And, you know, that was kind of a, UNC had always kind of been where former Fruita High School wrestlers went to wrestle. So I was excited to go to UNC and wrestle there. And, you know, had three good years there. You know, I think I won over 120 matches in college. And so that was, you know, very rewarding, because that's tough to do. You don't come across too many slouches at the collegiate level.
No doubt about that. You finished 7th, 5th, and 3rd at the Division II Nationals during your career at Northern Colorado. Lanny Paulson joining us in the program. And then the years after you competed on the mats, you spent some time as Fruita Monument's assistant softball coach in 2017, 2018. Your daughter Mallory went on to be an outstanding collegiate softball player as well. And so you had that connection with, and I remember you and I played some slow pitch softball together back in the day on a couple of different teams. But softball also kind of part of your life as well in playing and also coaching.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we had a lot of fun with playing fast pitch softball, particularly. You know, once I got out of college, we had a really good team. We ended up placing third 1 year. I think it was 1990, back at the ASA Class A Nationals, and I finished fourth, I believe. Really enjoyed being able to play fast pitch softball, and I was glad that my daughters both enjoyed the sport, so I was able to stay connected with that through them for an extended period after that.
Yeah, and to clarify, we played in a couple like tournament slow pitch softball teams. I wasn't nearly good enough to play fast pitch with you guys, but I remember playing a couple of those teams back in the day. Lanny Paulson joining us, and these days, Lanny, since 2010, you worked for Montrose County. You're the assistant finance director for Montrose County. So you've also worked for the city of Grand Junction previously. So you've been involved in city government in those areas for both here in the Valley and also in Montrose.
Yeah, I'm proud of my stint as a public servant. I do look at my job as doing what I can to help the local communities from the finance, budget, and accounting side. So, I've had a long, good career in that fold too. So,
well, Lanny, I appreciate the time today. It's been great catching up with you. Congratulations on getting selected by the Fruto Monument Wildcat Hall of Fame for induction into the Hall of Fame. You had an incredible wrestling career, and I always appreciate the time. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Jim, thank you.
All right, Lanny Paulson going into the Fruto Monument Wildcat Hall of Fame, and we're going to work in some more of the folks like Dan Miller, who helped to come up with a strength and conditioning program at Fruta. Likewise for Phil Wortman, who was a longtime track and field coach. They have the Invitational named after Phil, and the other folks that will be going in to the Hall of Fame. So we'll have those over the next week or so as we get closer to February 4th and this year's class of the Fruto Monument Wildcat Hall of Fame. All right, 9:35, Jim along with the Buckeye Boy. Text or call us, 970-242-1340. And let's go ahead and do a little good call, bad call before we get into this day in sports history.
Was that a good call, or did they totally blow it? It's good call or bad call.
Okay, this is more like, could this be a good call or a bad call?
Intrigue.
That we discussed this a little bit about overtime, about the lack of consistency. It's 10 minutes during the regular season, 15. First team scores a touchdown, wins. And some of this coming up from last night where Josh Allen didn't get his crack at the football.
Right.
And Mahomes and the Chiefs score. But the Chiefs have been on the other side of that when Brady and the Patriots did that.
Yeah.
And so there's the suggestion, this was made by the Baltimore Ravens, by the way, previously, over a spot and choose overtime. And this is starting to gain a little traction after this past weekend, that to start the overtime, one team chooses where the first drive of overtime will begin, and the other team chooses whether to play offense or defense. So the example is, one team, say they pick the 10-yard line, the other team would have to then choose between starting overtime in that spot on offense or defense. And they offered up a couple of alternatives, the Ravens did, based on spot and choose. One, the overtime session would proceed on a sudden death basis for up to 10 minutes, and then the two teams would play another 7 minutes and 30 seconds, with the team leading at the end of the extra period becoming the winner. Now, spot and choose didn't get a lot of support in 2021, but Mike Florio and Pro Football Talk, they are strongly recommending that the NFL needs to look at doing something different with overtime. Let's go a spot, the spot and choose. Do you like that idea? One team chooses where the first drive starts. The other team chooses whether to play offense or defense.
I'm going to go with a soft yes. I haven't had a chance to really sit down and ponder it and think of, you know, hypotheticals and how it would work this way as opposed to that way or whatever. It's better than what we got, right? It has to be better. I'm going to go soft yes that I would like the spot and choose, but I feel the NFL, that's too close to backyard football for them to want to hop on board with, I think.
And the NFL's already released a statement that the league is going to consider all options. This is from NFL Media. I give a kind of a soft good call.
Yeah, soft good call. Sorry.
Yeah, they could be. It's okay. It could be kind of interesting. Betcha never ever comes up for consideration again.
No. And something that is going to be happening, Amazon is getting into the world of football. And they might be putting together their own broadcast crews, including Troy Aikman. He could very well leave Fox for Amazon. Fox has a target in mind for Troy Aikman's replacement being Sean Payton, the head coach of New Orleans Saints.
Because Sean Payton's gone radio silence on talking to anybody with the Saints.
And usually Sean Payton's out there, making the rounds. In the playoffs, Dan Patrick, Coward, those places, he's not been anywhere. Good call, bad call if you're Sean Payton doing the Coward, Jimmy Johnson, John Madden route of, hey, I'm just a broadcaster. Wins and losses aren't on me anymore. I think that's a good call.
I think it's a good call. What I've heard is that he would take like a year off from coaching and do the broadcasting thing.
He would go Urban Meyer.
Right, and then see where how things play out going from there. Yeah, I think that's a good call.
I think that's a good call for him. He's already got a Super Bowl.
Yeah. All right, this day in sports history. These two teams could very well end up playing in a Super Bowl against each other again. We go back to 1982. San Francisco beat Cincinnati. Yeah. It was in a game of firsts. It was the first Super Bowl appearance for the 49ers and the Bengals. So both teams had never been there before. And the first time since Super Bowl III that in which neither competitor had been there before. It was the first time the Super Bowl had been held in a cold weather city. It was in Pontiac, Michigan at the Silver Dome, not in California, Texas, Louisiana, or Florida. It was also the first time the losing team produced more touchdowns, 3, than the team that won. And the first time both teams were coming off losing seasons. And it was the first Super Bowl in the, of course, young career of Joe Montana. Guided the Niners to a 13-win season in his first full year as their starting quarterback. Of course, he took over for my guy, Steve DeBerg.
Yep. And was that the John Candy game?
No,
that would have been the other one.
This was the first time. That was in Florida, the Tim Crumry game that he broke his leg.
Okay.
And Ken Anderson was the quarterback for the Bengals in this one.
Yeah.
Boomer was on that one. Which
I love Steve DeBerg.
Do we have to Boomer? Boomer. Shut up, Boomer. So tired. This is the bad thing about the Bengals doing well. Because you get to listen to Boomer talk about when he played there and how he took them to a Super Bowl and blah, blah, blah.
Although, in Boomer's defense, they didn't need to be good for Boomer to tell you he took them to a Super Bowl. We were much better when I played.
Joe Burrow. Should watch the tape on me and what I did back in the day. Also on this day, David Duval. Remember David Duval? When he was going to be one of the next great golfers? Yeah. That puts together one of the best rounds of golf ever at the Bob Hope Chrysler Classic. Down by 7 strokes at the start of the day, Duval shot 13 under par, 59, to run away with the win. He had 0 bogeys, 6 pars, 11 birdies, and an eagle on number 18 to tie the lowest round of golf in PGA history, joining Al Geiberger and Chip Beck as the only men to shoot a 59. And not only was he the first guy to accomplish the feat in the final round, he did it in dramatic fashion. He won the tournament by a stroke. There you go. That's this day in sports history. All right, 9:42, Jim along with the Buckeye Boy. Text or call us, 970-242-1340. We'll take a break and we'll come back with more on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network.
I'm a big sports addict.
I like sports.
Sports. Sports.
This is the Jim Davis Show on the Team. 101 FM, 1340 AM, Grand Junction. 102.1 FM, Delta Montrose.
Welcome back, 946. Good, the bad, the ugly. Got one from Bronco Sarge. Good, Brady losing. Bad, the Bills' defensive play calling late in the fourth. The ugly, the Bills' defensive play calling late in the fourth. Simply can't give Kansas City's weapons that much space to work with. Tyreek ran a 12-yard post and ran 60 yards without being touched. Bad and ugly. Got one from Matt. Good, Central girls are going to take state by storm. Bad, Central boys are much better than their record than the record that they have. Ugly, the Rams did almost everything they could to lose yesterday. Also, did the Broncos interview Kevin O'Connell, the Rams OC? Yes, they did talk to Kevin O'Connell. Going from Sonny. I care about who they sell the Broncos to. It'd be the most disturbing if they sell to somebody in another country, and it would be unfortunate if it has moved out of Colorado. First part, I can't address that because it's up for a bid.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a chance you could have foreign investment, possibly bid on the team. I don't know what the NFL rules are in regard to that.
Right. And
we know that exists in the NBA.
I think with some of the other teams that have come up in similar internationally known markets, there's not been a whole lot of international bid. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think when the Panthers came up, there were international bids, or the Browns, or
right, because
anybody else that
Shad Khan's American. Let's get that out of the way first. We're going, what about Jacksonville? He's American.
Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I don't know really if that's. I don't know where that worry is coming from. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
I've not seen any international.
No,
usually it basketball and hockey, and they're Canadian. As the international as that gets, right? So I don't know if baseball and football are really like the British Premier League, to where people that don't live in the country are going to be buying in like Americans have over there. You know, I don't know where that worry is coming from.
Yeah, that tends to be a very minor concern on my part. And moving the team out
Jags
of...
Jags and Broncos to London.
There we go.
Dun, dun, dun.
And moving the team out of Denver... Even with the way things go on, where they had, 10,000-11,000 no-shows,
mm-hmm.
that more often than not, that place is full. The fan base is behind this football team, even in the bad years. I mean, yeah, 10,000-11,000 no-shows is not great.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't see a scenario where they, you know, never say never, right? Because we've talked about this.
Right.
You never say never. Because even the great Pat Bowlen... about building a new stadium, made threats about, well, mm-hmm. this doesn't work out.
Right.
That's when Houston and L.A. were open.
Pat Bowlen was just like every other owner in the league. He exploited the fan base for a stadium.
Everybody does. Yeah, he made those comments. People forget about that with him. That, well, you know, if we don't get a stadium, then, boy, L.A., Houston, those are places mm-hmm. that, you know, might be attractive. And, boy, we'd really rather stay here, yeah. But... So you never, you know, Sonny, you never say never. I'm not overly concerned about either one of those two things, though.
Not really.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know most of Broncos fans won't, but if the team is bought and moved, that's kind of on Pat Bowlen, too.
Because
what we talked about earlier, he could have completely squashed all of this, but he's like, Joe, trust is doing it. And then got sick. Which I'm sure he didn't plan for, obviously.
Well, no, he
and
didn't.
And it's unfortunate, and it's sad, but the team is in this position because of Pat Bowlen's decisions.
And that's why it's important, particularly with something that is a multi-billion dollar
mm-hmm.
business. I don't care who you are, what you do. Having solid planning down the road
yeah.
is important. And for Pat Bowlen... To not do a better job of laying out a succession plan, of not getting his kids together and saying, let's come to an agreement here on who's going to be the leader going forward.
Right.
On how we're going to approach this. And to leave it to Joe Ellis and the two trustees to pick somebody among all the Bolin kids who they could all agree on, which was not going to happen.
No, pick one of the daughters, and then when she meets the expectations and requirements, move the goalpost on her so she doesn't get it.
And then
people forget about that too, because they didn't want her particularly
Wallace.
To run it.
Yeah,
you know, this is a mess of Pat's doing, and I know Broncos fans don't like hearing that, but that's the truth.
It is the truth. He could have left this in a better situation than he did. And this falls on him, not preparing before he got Alzheimer's, not preparing a plan where it was going to be able to be kept in the family.
Right.
And now it's up for somebody else own this football team.
Yeah. And then therein lies the risk that you run.
Yeah. Of somebody.
The team maybe being moved. The Rams have moved three times.
Yeah.
The Cardinals started out in Chicago, you know.
Yeah, I tend to think that the Broncos are not going anywhere, regardless who buys them. But you can never say never, Sonny. And I'll agree with you on that point. All right, let's wrap it up with a hop in the dumpster this morning.
We're taking out the trash. It's garbage time on the Jim Davis Show on the Team.
Oh, I love trash.
Okay, I love what Andy Reid apparently told Patrick Mahomes with 13 seconds left to go.
I love this line.
Okay, here's Andy Reid.
You still have time to get the field goal, but it looks pretty grim there. What, you have any special advice to Pat right there? Do you have any words for him at that point when Buffalo took the lead for the last time?
Yeah, when it's grim, be the grim reaper and go get it. So he did that. He went. He made everybody around him better, which he is great at, and you know, he just does it effortlessly.
I love that. Yeah. When it's grim, be the grim reaper.
That's a great line.
And Patty Mahomes delivered on that.
That's second best line from Andy Reid ever. The first one being after he won the Super Bowl, he's going to go find the biggest double cheeseburger he can find.
That was great, too.
Loved it. Remember in the Monday morning quarterback, back in June or July, when the Rams acquired Matt Stafford, remember what Sean McVay called him? Dude's a bad MF. And he showed up that on Saturday afternoon, or Sunday afternoon, rather, with that throw to Cooper Kupp.
Oh, no doubt about it. Yeah. Also, Matthew Stafford and Ndamukong Suh. Now, Ndamukong Suh is normally known for stomping on people.
Yeah,
and
he's
doing
the
stuff
kicker guy.
But not this time around, because apparently Matt Stafford gave a little extra kick on a tackle made by Sue. Immediately, Sue started yelling at Stafford. And on the broadcast, you can hear Sue yelling an official, "You see, he kicked me?" And yes, Matthew Stafford did kick Ndamukong Suh.
It's like a dude running out of a bank with a bag full of cash and someone taking one of them. He robbed me. Well,
To be fair, You've had a history, sir, of this kind
That's
of behavior.
That's how Ndamukong Suh knew exactly what happened.
Exactly, because he knows how that plays out.
It's the fourth grade. Takes one to know one.
Do you have anything else?
No, I don't.
You don't? Okay. Apparently, the Rams are trying really hard to keep 49er fans from buying up a bunch of the tickets at SoFi.
Good luck with that. They made it to Dallas.
Yeah. Did you see how many Niners? Yeah. How many Niners fans were at that game at Jarrah World? Yeah. Good luck, Rams, on trying to keep Niner fans out of SoFi on Sunday. Also, odds are out. This is through a win bet. The Chiefs are a 7-point favorite over the Bengals. The Rams are a 3.5-point favorite over the Niners for Sunday's AFC NFC Championship game.
Didn't the Niners sweep this year, the Rams?
I believe they did.
I thought they did. That's saucy.
All right. So we'll have both those games this Sunday on the team. That's the number I saw. They're a 3.5-point favorite.
Niners won both of those games, too.
Yeah. All right. Don't forget, we'll have CMU women's basketball, Black Hills State today, pregame at 3:45. Then the Avalanche take on Chicago tonight, 6:30 pregame on the team. See you back here tomorrow.